Hello, and welcome to the Mighty Electronic Box for the week of 24th of February 2014. I'm your host this week, Bradley, and I'm here with John. Say hello.
Yo.
And no Joe, sadly. He's forsaken us, left us to rot.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Given up on video games.
I think this is a pretty weird time for me and Joe in terms of work stuff. Like,
yeah, you guys have been busy as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully, like, I know for a fact, like, the end of this month, stuff's gonna calm down a bit, and like, I'll be able to play more games and probably be free most weekends to record. But yeah, this month's been it's been rough. Yeah, I mean, it'll be worth it when I get paid. But yeah,
definitely. It's nice. Me, I've had a bit of work. Like, last few weeks I didn't play very much, but this week I've squeezed in a few bits and pieces. I'm looking forward to talking about some stuff. But first and foremost, John, why don't you tell me what you've been playing in between your work?
Yes, I will do, Bradley. I played a bunch of Hotline Miami on the Vita, just because that game's awesome. Yeah, I went down the...
Still don't believe you.
I went down the Joe route of buying the same game on multiple platforms.
You've been learning well from him then.
Yeah, I've got Spelunky on the Vita and 360 now, and PS3, but that's because it's a cross-play, whatever it's called, thing.
I've still only played like half an hour of Spelunky.
Yeah, that game's cool. And yeah, Hotline Miami, I already owned that on the PC, but that's a really good idea for a game on the Vita, because you can just pick it up, do a couple of runs of a level or whatever, and put it down. And I think I don't think I've actually turned off my Vita for probably about a week. Like, I just put it on lock, and like, the battery just doesn't drain at all. And you just pick
PSP was good like that as well.
Yeah, you just pick it up and pick up from where you left off. So I've got a pretty good game of Hotline Miami going. Yeah, that game's...
Have you played through that multiple times now? Like, do you just restart when you're
Or what do you do? I think I've played it probably, like, one and a half times. Well, actually, probably it adds up now to, like, two times. I've played, like, the first half of it twice, because I finished it on the PC and then, like, played it again some other time a while ago, and got about halfway through. And then now I'm, like, halfway through those first set of levels on the Vita now. That game's awesome. I did have a little like problem getting used to like the size of the Vita sort of sticks, I guess. Just in terms of doing like, because that game like pretty much functions as like a dual joystick sort of thing. When you're playing on the Vita, like I actually think I slightly prefer the PC controls. Like, using the mouse was slightly easier with like, especially with like the aiming and stuff. And having the little reticule on screen, which you still do have that on the Vita, but it's obviously not as easy with the little, those sticks are pretty small, and I've got slightly large thumbs. So
do you use guns much in that game, or do you mostly just whack dudes?
There are certain situations where it's pretty much required that you're gonna have to use a gun. Just certain rooms are just set up where it's like, this would be extremely difficult. And you would die probably a bunch of times just trying to go in there with a baseball bat or something. But I mean, yeah, that is sort of the fun of Hotline Miami, is using the melee weapons. I think like the guns just aren't as exciting. Like, if you just run into a room and whack a bunch of dudes in quick succession, like that's way more fun than just bursting in and shooting people, I guess. I do like try to stick to melee mostly, but sometimes you do need a gun. It works really well on the Vita, and it's still Hotline Miami. Like, I haven't really changed anything, but I guess if you've never played it and you've got a Vita, it's not like a terrible port by any means.
That's probably a good game to have like on the go.
Yeah,
if you're actually using the Vita
the
way you're meant to. Like, that game, the levels are pretty short. You could probably do one on a journey.
Yeah, definitely. And it's got that sort of like instant sort of like dying and respawn, and you haven't really lost much progress. So it's like,
yeah.
There's no massive sort of commitment to it. Like, you can just sort of pick it up and put it back down. It's the same with Spelunky, I guess. Spelunky's maybe a bit more commitment. If you go on some crazy run, like you probably don't want to put it down. But if you're bad at Spelunky like me, you'll probably die a lot. But yeah, it's been really cool seeing like the sort of the ports, the stuff that's getting taken from like the PC and like the 360, like arcade store stuff, like that coming to the Vita, and those games being awesome.
That seems like a good platform for those kind of games, because a lot of those, you know, Xbox Live Arcade games and stuff seem really at home on a platform, you know, a portable and smaller platform.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's good to see that the Vita isn't just, you know, it's finding its niche now, I think.
Yeah, totally. Like, there's not going to be that much original stuff coming out for the Vita now, I don't think, but the stuff that is there, even if it is just like ports of other stuff, it's still cool. And there is some original stuff, like Olly Olly, I don't think is on anything else.
Have you got that?
Yeah, I think that's purely Vita, and that's a really awesome game.
Seems cool.
So yeah, I think the way forward for the Vita, or for me personally on the Vita, is the smaller stuff, because there is something to be said for playing like a big sort of story, blockbustery sort of game on like a bigger screen. You know, with slightly better controls, just because the size of the sticks, I guess, and the size of the buttons and stuff, like, is slightly detrimental. But you know, it's still a really awesome platform. I did play a tiny bit of Gravity Rush, just because I said I should play it, but I can't, like, I don't know. I don't know why I'm not playing it, because that game is awesome. It's just it's actually got a pretty interesting sort of story going on, and like, I want to like sort of play it in like longer sessions than just, you know, put a quick burst, because you do sort of lose track of the story if you're just picking up and put it down constantly. But I played through The Last of Us DLC, Left Behind. That DLC is really good. If you're into The Last of Us, you should probably play it. It really surprised me in terms of like what it manages to do with information that you already know by the end of the game. Like, you already know how the story sort of plays out. The story that is in the DLC, because Ellie pretty much tells Joel like at the end, like that's like the sort of last minute of The Last of Us, is her telling Joel this story. But like the way that like the execution of that story is really, really well done. I guess sort of spoilers to The Last of Us, maybe. I don't know.
It's cool. I'm never gonna get around to playing that, so myself out.
But yeah, like the execution is awesome, and the way they sort of frame it in terms of the larger game is pretty cool. Like, it's not just so I guess I'll sort of set it up. Like, it's basically it's Ellie, like, before she's ever met Joel. And, like, she's just hanging out in the city being Ellie. And, like, a person, this girl, is it Riley? God, why am I forgetting her name? it's Riley. She basically comes back after Ellie having thought her dead for, like, a couple of months or something. And just like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, let's do something. So they decide to go to like an abandoned mall or whatever.
As you do.
Yeah, as you do, I guess, in the post-apocalypse. Yeah.
Let's go play on the abandoned mall. Yay!
Yeah, there's probably not much else to do in weird quarantined virus land. But so they go there and have some adventures. And like the majority of that, the sort of flashback stuff, is like combatless. Like, it's pretty much you walking around, sort of interacting with the environment, talking to Riley, and seeing all the cool little stuff that they've set up. But like, it's framed within a point, like in the actual core story of The Last of Us. After Joel is pretty severely wounded. And he's like passed out and stuff, so you don't really see this part of the story in the main game. And Ellie's going around trying to like find supplies in like another abandoned mall. So it's like, it's sort of mirroring what's happening in the DLC, like the sort of that flashback story. And that like the stuff like in the sort of the core Last of Us story stuff isn't like really that story heavy, because it's just Ellie like running around, like there's no one, she's not really interacting with anyone except for, you know, killing dudes. But it's got a pretty decent like little collectibles sort of story. There's like a helicopter that's crashed into the mall, and there's a good little string of collectibles you can pick up, and like it's a combination of like written stuff and then some audio stuff. I thought that stuff was actually quite well done. So that's enough to sort of keep you going through that stuff. The real meat of that DLC, and the best part about it is the flashback stuff. It's just got a lot of cool moments of them doing stuff that like would seem sort of boring and normal to us, but like if you think of like these people, you know, were born like after the breakout of the virus, so like they don't really know like what the hell, like they go to like some like fancy dress like Halloween store and start putting on the masks and stuff. And yeah, there's some pretty funny dialogue in that stuff, but yeah, sort of knowing where that story goes, it gives it a really like I think Brad said on the Bombcast, like it gives it a sense of dread, because you just know, like you know exactly where it's going, and you're like, please don't actually let this happen, because so, like this, yeah. Like the relationship between the two characters is really well done. Like considering Riley isn't a character that's ever like seen or heard from in the main like Last of Us story, like you get to know her really well over the course of like 2 or 3 hours or something.
Right.
Like her dialogue's really well done. And it's really well done. It's like it is of the standard of like the core story of The Last of Us. It's awesome. And it doesn't like, it's not like some like, oh, it's gonna like, there's gonna be some twist where it's like, oh, and then this affects something that actually happened in like the main story. It's like it's purely the stuff that you've already heard. It's just it's the execution of it really. There is one sort of surprising moment, I guess. I'd say, like sort of about like Ellie's backstory, but yeah, it's really well done, basically.
And remember on the Bombcast when they were talking about it, they mentioned, Brad mentioned, someone posted about the idea of mixing this in line with the story. Mm. So if they made like an ultimate edition of The Last of Us, would it fit in? As part of the main story, or does it work much better as an incident, like something you go back to after you've?
Yeah, I think it works better. It's just purely because of the way that, like the way the main story, the story of the main game goes. Like Ellie doesn't tell Joel that story until right at the end, so it wouldn't really make sense to have it actually happen in the middle, because you would lose a lot of the weight of that sort of moment at the end if you like showed the events happening. I guess. Well, yeah, you put yeah. I think it works really well as DLC, basically. Maybe not something you could just sort of shove in the middle. Especially because there's this sort of jarring but awesome moment in the main game when you go from like Joel having passed out in it. Like the way the game works is it like every say it's about 5 hours or something, it'll switch seasons and it'll just like sort of fade to black, and then it'll just say like summer or winter or whatever in the corner, and then that's like the start of a new part of the game. And the switch, I think right. It's the switch between autumn and winter is when it's like in between that is when Joel gets like injured. Just before that switch is when Joel gets injured. So when it comes back, it's like it just starts you playing as Ellie, and I think that's like a really cool moment. Like the way the DLC works is it sort of shows exactly what happens. Like there's not that like sudden switch to just playing as Ellie and like not really knowing what's going on with Joel. Like, cause at that point you could almost like, it doesn't really like Ellie, I don't think mentions Joel for quite a while, like in that bit. So you sort of like is dull dead, because like there is a very real possibility he could be. But like if you obviously see her like patting him up and stuff and walking away, you sort of know that like he's probably not dead. Right. So it probably wouldn't work, I don't think. I mean, it'd be nice, I can see it like being like the game like finishing and then it'd be like, oh, do you want to play the Left Behind DLC now or something? But it wouldn't fit. It wouldn't just go straight in the middle.
Fair enough.
But yeah, it's really awesome. And yeah, I suppose sort of jumping ahead a bit to news, Neil Druckmann, the writer, did an AMA on Reddit and got asked about a sequel. And he said there was a 50-50 chance that one could be made. I'm not
decent odds.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure how I feel about that, but if it's a game set in that universe but not with the same characters, then I'm totally okay with that, because
like, isn't that the same argument we had for Walking Dead?
Well, I the thing is that I was sort of wanting to see where Clementine went, but I think Joel and Ellie's story has a really, really strong finale, and like to like sort of carry that on, like I don't think would work. Like I still thought there was room for Clementine's story to go somewhere after the end of the first season of The Walking Dead, but yeah. God, that second episode of the second season must be out soon, because it's been a while.
Have you played the first episode?
Yeah. I think that came out in like December of last.
Yeah, it feels like a long time ago.
Yeah,
now,
I think. Well, I think.
Did we talk about it at all, or did we just move on?
I don't know, because I'm sure I remember talking about it, just saying it was good. It was, but
maybe we mentioned it briefly. I guess after that we were just like, okay, and then
it's not really the sort of game where you can talk about like the mechanics and the stuff surrounding the story, because that game is purely story. And I think the reason it's been so long since the first episode for the second episode to come out is because there's also been a massive delay with The Wolf Among Us, which like just came out this month, and I still haven't played it. Although I did get a code from Microsoft after the whole season pass thing fucked up, but I still haven't actually.
Oh yeah, I remember.
I should get on that, because The Wolf Among Us is awesome. But Rocksmith got fixed, which is awesome.
All right.
Or got at least partially fixed. Like the major error where it would sort of not remember your progress in a song has been fixed, which is great. So yeah, I've been playing a bunch of that. I mean, I hadn't really stopped playing it, but it did sort of put me off when it was like, well, yeah, I can play the song, but then I'm going to have to like manually level it up again. Yeah, it was just stupid, basically. But now that's fixed. That's really awesome. I've spent a silly amount of money on DLC as well.
What songs did you play?
Oh God, well, they came up with like, they're doing like a song or like an artist pack every week now, but I haven't really bought them. I think I bought the Hugh one and Iron Maiden.
Good any Dragon Force?
There's no Dragon Force yet. That would be
that's not good enough.
Insane. I think the problem with that is the licensing stuff is a bit crazy because of Activision like being dicks.
Because
they're not really actively producing music games anymore, but there's still like there's a lot of artists that are still locked down. So it's like there's certain stuff that's just never going to be on there, but like of the artists that are on there, there are definitely like more songs I want to hear from those artists. So I'm trying to think what came out most recently. I don't know. I also bought this was a while ago, but I bought a copy of the original Rocksmith and did like the track import stuff, and that costs about £20 like overall, and now it's like another 50 songs or something, so that was a worthwhile investment because some of those songs are awesome. I'm trying to think of the other DLCs.
So between Rock Band 1 and 2
Rocksmith 1 and 2
and Rocksmith
yeah.
1 and 2 yeah what so if you importing a song from one to the other, do you still get all of the kind of features that they added to two when it comes to like the teaching stuff, or have they updated that, or is it just you can?
Well,
I don't know enough about the game to know
thing
what
is,
it gets
like,
you
it's not
to have
really
a song.
Like, there's not on like a per song level. There's not like in depth teaching. It's more like the way it levels up is I think it was pretty similar between both games, and like, as you play a song better, it levels up. And like, I don't think that stuff's really changed. You'll notice like on the older Rocksmith, like there's a stuff from Rocksmith 1, like the song sections, like the way they split it up is like there's a lot less of those sections.
Right.
So it's like, I think that's one of the improvements they made with Rocksmith 2 or 2014 or whatever, is making smaller sections. So it was like, if you want to learn a solo, like in Rocksmith 1, it was like, here's the solo as one section, which
nail it.
if you've got like a 30-second solo and it's some ridiculous thing, it's like that's never gonna happen. Like with Rocksmith 2, they got way better at splitting it up into like here's like 5 seconds of the solo, but then when you're doing the riff repeater stuff, you can just like you can add bits and take away bits as you see fit. So it's like, right, well this 5 second section I've got down, but like I want to play this as like one whole sort of run. So I can like add like these other sections in, and like, yeah, I think that's...
Is the riff repeater one of the new features?
Yeah, I'm not actually sure. I should actually maybe like play Rocksmith, because like all I did was like, I think all I had to
rip
do was
songs
like,
up,
pretty much make a profile and then like do the import in 2014. So yeah.
So I presume you can use the riff repeater with all the DLC and the old songs?
Yeah, yeah.
And then just customize it however you want that way.
Yeah, pretty much. But like, yeah, the problem with the Rocksmith stuff is like just the way that those songs are like coded into the game, like the sections are a lot larger, which does suck for some of the stuff that's a bit more complicated, and like you need it to be a bit more sort of chopped up into smaller bits. I still can't remember any of the other deal, because I definitely bought more than just that stuff, Rocksmith become like my sort of default, like I want to play a game but I don't really know what I want to play, so I'll just play Rocksmith.
That's fair enough.
Which is good, because it's like I feel like I'm actually doing something constructive with my time instead of
you're playing a guitar.
Yeah.
I think exactly.
I think I said this like when we're doing the Game of the Year stuff, but like it's definitely made me better at playing the guitar, which is awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I don't actually think I played anything else, which is weird because haven't recorded one of these for like 2 weeks, but I will definitely play The Wolf Among Us at some point, and maybe have my PC built by next time we record, because like I've got like, I think the only thing I don't have is, well, I don't have a copy of Windows, and I don't have a CPU, but...
Minor problems.
I think I've got everything. Well, I think the plan was to like split it over to sort of pay checks. So I sort of fucked up, because I was going to do it like try and do it 50-50, but I've done it like 80-20 in terms of the cost. Like I've bought a bunch of stuff this month.
Nailed that.
Once Thursday rolls around, I'll order that CPU, get a copy of Windows. That's the thing I'm not sure about, is whether it get a copy of Windows 8 or not, because I can't tell whether it's people being dumb about people get really arsey about like new iterations of Windows and then like start evangelizing the previous version. Like,
yeah, except for Vista, nobody liked
Vista. Nobody liked Vista, but you know. When Vista came around and like people were like, oh, XP, da, 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 and then like, yeah, with the same time with Windows 8, I think, is like, I don't think anyone was crazy about Windows 7, but then it's when Windows 8 comes out, it's like, oh, Windows 7 was so much better. It's like,
well, Windows 7 was a really, like, it's the closest thing we've had to XP since XP, like in terms of it being just rock solid. My opinion on the Windows 7, Windows 8 argument is Windows 8 is faster. So if you want your computer to boot up quicker and you don't mind putting up with a few awkwardnesses in its user interface, then just get Windows 8. if you are going to find that irritating, which I think I would probably stick with Windows 7.
Yeah.
Like the things that are irritating, they've done a bunch of stupid stuff with Windows 8. Like, for example, when you connect to a wireless network or something, or basically when you connect to any network, you have to open up the stupid charm menu bullshit that comes up from the side. And for some reason, the Windows 8.1 update, which didn't make a bunch of good changes, they've deleted loads of like really useful functions. Like, for example, to forget a Wi-Fi network or and so you can re-enter the details again. You have to do it from command prompt. Like, you can't even do it through the user interface anymore. You used to be able to
What?
right click on it and click forget network, and they just deleted that for
What?
no reason whatsoever. And I went on, like, you go on Microsoft's, MSDN, and it's like, if you would like to forget a network, please open CMD and type NETSH dash dash delete and then load of bullshit. It's like, what? Why? Why is that a thing? What was wrong with right clicking and clicking forget network? But yeah, it's
Yeah.
just things like that that irritate me to the point where I'm like, I don't know, I can be bothered with Windows 8. But it's faster. Like, copying and pasting is faster. Boot is faster. So there's no real good reason not to get it. Like, it's as compatible as everything as Windows 7 was
Yeah.
now.
Yeah, and there's no real difference in
And they're the same price. They're like
price.
10 quid.
Yeah,
10
yeah.
quid difference. It's nothing.
So, yeah, maybe I will just get Windows 8. I think the initial thing was thinking like, oh, maybe I should like just get everything now, and like I just got enough that I could probably, and I was like, oh, maybe I'd slightly cut down on cost by getting Windows 7, but really the
Quite
I'll
often,
just
Windows 7 will end up costing more than Win 8
yeah.
just because I don't know why, but
I'll just wait
yeah.
and get Windows 8 probably. And I think in like a couple of months when everyone like stops being crazy, or well, maybe not a couple of months, but when everyone stops being crazy, it'll be like, yeah, Windows 8's fine.
Yeah. Although there were rumors recently about Windows 9
Huh.
already because
That's, yeah.
Windows 8 didn't sell very well, apparently,
That's weird.
surprisingly.
Well, if that's the case, maybe I don't know. I don't know. Whatever. I mean,
You'll be waiting forever if you end up waiting,
yeah, I
that's
suppose if Windows 9 does roll around in like a couple of years, then I'll just get it. It's not some massive issue, really.
yeah, if you're lucky, they'll do the same thing they did with Windows 8 and just make it like 20 quid at the start. They
Yeah.
basically just gave Windows 8 away to begin with.
Yeah, so yeah, I've got everything. The case. I actually got the case like yes, was it yesterday?
What did you go for in the end again?
The case.
Yeah.
It's like a God, what the hell's the make of it? Is it Corsair? I think it's Corsair. Yeah, it's Corsair. Like it's one of like the I think it was like 50 quid. It's quite cheap, sort of
Yeah,
basic, but
I
like
only spent about 60 quid on mine,
yeah,
and
I
it's
think mine was like 45 or something. So
that's
I think
good.
it's like a 200R, maybe. Yeah, it's pretty basic, but like
Yeah,
I don't like
sound good.
need like flashing neon lights and like a big glass thing so I can see the cables. Like I'm not really bothered. As long as it
Especially because the cables will look like shit
yeah,
once
it's
you
probably
do
yeah.
I still get mad every time I have my PC, and my PC is like pretty damn neat inside. Like, I'd managed to tuck everything way behind, but then when you look behind, and it's absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
There's still a few cables that aren't as neat as I'd like them to be,
Yeah.
but when you look at like professional, cable management, it just I don't understand how people bend cables to their will that well.
Yeah.
It's like, how did you have the patience to achieve that? That's unbelievable.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't
Blows my mind.
hate cables. But yeah, cases, yeah, it's slightly bigger than I was expecting, but it's still fits where I wanted it to fit, so that's all right.
Sorry.
Other than that motherboard issue,
Oh yeah.
I think it's went all right. I just ended up buying a cheap-ish adapter thing.
Yeah. Is it a PCI one or a USB?
It's a PCI.
Okay.
Yeah, because like I looked it up after the fact when I realized it didn't have Wi-Fi, and it's basically the same model except with like a couple of extra things on the end, and like
Yeah.
yeah, that's annoying. But
A few extra letters.
yeah, pretty much that. But whatever.
That's a lot.
But that yeah, that was it. That's it for game stuff. This past couple of weeks, or whatever.
Cool. I guess I should talk about what I played over the past week.
Mm.
I finally finished Pokemon X and Y on the train
Dude.
To my girlfriend's last weekend, which was what?
It's been a while. Like,
what, since I last played Pokemon? Yeah, it's weird. It's like, I don't know, I just got burned out on that game, I think, because I played it quite a lot at the beginning. And then I had like 7 of 8 badges. I was so near the end. And when I was going to my girlfriend's, you know how there was all the flooding
Oh,
in
yeah.
Southeast England? So I was taking the train through Maidenhead area, and we stopped for like a good 2 hours and just didn't move, which was fun. But it did allow me to beat Pokemon on the train. So, you know, that's that's the thing. Finally took over the last gym. That game, I beat the Elite Four first go.
Hmm.
Which is kind of a bummer. That's the first Pokemon game I've ever beaten the Elite Four first go. I think Pokemon Black and White, which I really enjoyed, I thought they were really good Pokemon games, I gave up because I couldn't beat the Elite Four.
Yeah.
Because I just would have had to go grind for ages and I couldn't be arsed. And then Pokemon X and Y, when they added the, you know, the experience share change, and it just basically meant my party was broken and it wasn't really challenging at all, which isn't that bad, but it's kind of fun to realize you can't beat the Elite Four first go and have to, you know, manage potions and, you know, strategize. But I just raffle stomped. I mean, I had a level 80 far fetched by the end of the game, which was kind of funny. So, you know, that's the thing. And there's still a bunch of post-game content I haven't looked into at all.
Yeah.
Collecting all the Mega Stone things that you can use to Mega Evolve Pokemon. I've got an Ampharos that I'd like to get the Mega Evolution of and stuff like that. But that's a good Pokemon game. I still stand by what I said last year. I really enjoyed it. It's one of the best Pokemon games in a long time, and a lot of that comes from the fact that they just give you mostly first-generation Pokemon. It's like the new Pokemon, I barely saw any of them at all.
Yeah.
Most of my party is first gen mainly. I ditched my starter because it was hot garbage. And then realized I should have got a Chespin, which is funny. You know what? That's the first Pokemon game where when you beat the game, they give you one of the other starters.
Hmm.
And I'm wondering if you can get the third one as well. Because I didn't get to choose what the next one I got was. It was just like one of your rivals came up to you and was like, I got this from the daycare. Here you go. And it's just basically the first, you know, level 5 version of what they had at the beginning of the game.
Mm.
Which is cool, because now I can actually get the grass starter, which the grass starter is actually the coolest one. It's really surprising. I would not have guessed that. The third evolution of it is dope as shit. It's like grass steel, I think. Well, that's what it looks like. It looks awesome. Can't remember what it's
called. So, is trading still a thing?
Chesnaught. Yeah, so there's still the whole, you know, different Pokemon in X than there is in Y. But generally, that's only like 5 Pokemon in the whole game, and maybe one of the legendaries. Which is a good point. I haven't seen a single legendary yet. There's a whole bunch of caves dotted around the map that are like, you go up to them. And then there's just a dude that's just like, you need to be the champion to go in here. Not sure why, you just do. It's like, okay, it was really annoying because there's one cave I spent ages making my way through and I got like all the way to the end of it, and then there's just a fucking dude standing at the end. It's like, you can't go in this bit because there's a legendary in here. I didn't say that. So yeah, I had to go beat the Elite Four before they allow me in any of those caves. So there's about 3 of those I can go back to now. There's a whole bunch of weird legendaries that they've got in this version of the game that I hadn't really looked into. So yeah, maybe I'll do that, maybe not. Kind of got into some other games, which I'll talk about now. So other than that, my longtime friend who hasn't had a PC that's good enough to play any games for ages, but I played Shogun with, finally got a new laptop. So I've been playing a shit ton of Rome Total War, the new one, Rome 2. And that game, it's really good. I really like it. I played like 24 hours so far, just over the last few days since he got his new laptop. And yeah, I'm really enjoying it. We're doing what we did last time with Shogun, which is basically we did a co-op campaign. So you just start the game allied together and then work together to, you know, conquer conquer most of Europe and a bit of whatever to the hells to the east of Europe. And he started as Egypt. I am the Seleucids, and we're sort of expanding out from the Middle East. Okay, so back from a minor excursion. Move back on to talking about some Rome too. I was just mentioning how my friend is playing as Egypt, and then I'm playing as a Seleucid, so we're sort of just to the east of them down there in sort of North Africa slash the Middle East. And it's been interesting because when you start as a Seleucid, you have a bunch of effectively vassals. You have a bunch of what are called satrapies that are just client states that you are allied with, but they sort of lose all their diplomatic power. So you make diplomatic decisions for them, like when you go to war, they have to go to war with you. And basically, because I'm a more powerful nation than them, they follow me effectively. And in the past, when Kivi said he had, my friend Kivi had said he had played as the Seleucids, basically all his vassals, his satrapies, had revolted against him, kind of Crusader Kings 2 style. And and then, he's had to like beat them back down and steal all their territory. For some really odd reason, we've played about, I don't know, 40, 50 turns, 24 hours or so, and I haven't lost a single satrapy yet. They're all just, going about their business, which is kind of cool for me because they give me loads of money. Like my entire economy is built upon all the money that they give me every year, which is nice. But yeah, Rome too has reminded me how I think I significantly enjoy the turn-based part of Total War games more than the real-time strategy part on the battlefield. I do like a lot of my sort of, plotting about how you're going to invade a different region, take the provinces, what buildings you're going to upgrade, that kind of stuff. I really enjoy it, and then making like trade agreements and stuff like that's good fun. And yeah, Rome 2 is a really good Total War game. So if you're into that kind of thing, I do strongly recommend it. The AI is, I don't know, the AI's been all right actually. A few times they've actually outsmarted me in a couple of ways, and we're only playing on normal, which is saying a lot for Total War AI because usually it's hot garbage. But there have been battles where there still have been battles where the bar, that predicts how in favor of the battle you are has been like all the way in their favor and still been able to ruffle stomp and win just because the enemy don't really make good effective use of their troops sometimes or run into a pike wall and the suicide. But there have been battles where I've gone in pretty even and then come out, being pretty battered because they seem to be a bit better than usual. But yeah, Total War's a good game. I'm probably going to keep on playing it for another 20 hours at least to finish this campaign. See if we can conquer the whole of the map like we did last time. In Shogun, we took over all of Japan between us, which was pretty neat. Because the game has victory conditions like civilization, so I have like a military victory or a political victory. I think we started with like a third of the military victory already completed, because our two nations allied together are actually quite large. But I don't know how soon we'll beat the game, but once you beat the game, it's just like, do you want to carry on playing anyway? From that point, it's kind of easy though, because you kind of own like half a third of the world or something, so it's pretty easy to just roll over the rest of it. But considering how large the map is, I think it's one of the largest maps in a Total War game. It's going to get tricky to micromanage, all the different war fronts, make sure, you're not losing territories in one place whilst invading somewhere else and so on. And on top of that, there's already some campaign DLC out. There's the Caesar and Gaul DLC, which is like, so they've changed it up. They've added that has, so every turn in normal Rome 2 is a year, but that DLC is basically just a zoomed in view of only a subsection of the map, and every turn is 2 weeks instead of a whole year. So they've added back in seasons, and then the seasons can have an effect on gameplay. So like if the summer goes on for a really long time, it can like ruin all your crops if it's like a long dry summer and things like that, which is cool because I quite liked the seasons in Shogun 2. They were neat. being able to fight on like the,
Yeah.
you know, snowy battlefields and stuff and seeing that. That game looks really good as well. And what's quite interesting is, I don't know if you remember when I talked about it originally back when it came out, there were a load of performance issues. It runs super, super smooth for me now. It's unbelievable how different it is. I remember really struggling to get it
Yeah,
running
I've
at,
heard a
you
lot of
know, above
people
30 FPS and feeling
had a really
nice.
bad problem, even with like pretty high-end PCs, like.
Yeah. My PC's getting on a bit, but I would have hoped to be able to run it at a decent spec. But now it's like near enough, like
Yeah.
50, 60 FPS most of the time, and it feels really good. And on the battlefield, like the scale is unbelievable. Like we're playing on the maximum unit size. It's called Ultra. And it's just like as many people as possible. And I've had fights with over
Yeah.
10,000 men on the battlefield, and it's been super smooth. And I do love how in that game, when people die, their bodies don't
Yeah.
disappear
Yeah,
ever.
the battlefield
So
gets
you
pretty
just
awesome
have
at the end
a
of but
smattering of
yeah.
bodies just everywhere. It's great. Dead elephants, all
elephants.
kinds of good stuff. My favorite thing is that they've added, I think I took a screenshot of it a long time ago, the vaulting animation. So like when the little dudes get near like a fence or a bazaar, a market, they jump over like the counters and stuff or the fences, and it looks really good. Like it's the attention to detail in that is
Yeah.
really, really neat. So I might end up getting the DLC if I enjoy the campaign, main campaign enough. Might even venture out and try another faction afterwards.
Do you remember that TV show from a while ago where it was basically people playing
Yes.
Rome Total War by
Yes. I
God.
love that show. It was amazing. I remember, I think I watched that show before I got
Yeah.
the original Rome, because it was basically a modified
Yeah.
Total War engine that they were playing on. And I watched the shit out of that show, and then I was like, holy shit, there's a game that is literally
Yeah.
this TV show. Why do I not
Oh,
own this
that
game? So
was
got that. And my parents like bought that game for me because it was like
awesome.
semi-educational. They were like, yeah, I can just
Yeah.
they can justify that.
Yeah, actually, it's like,
So
yeah.
that was
I mean, I
good.
think I've mentioned this already, but like Crusader Kings 2 like got me super interested in like the history of that period.
History. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we were playing Rome 2, we were talking about how, so you know, you can mount all your dudes up onto a ship and send them across. So you can have elephant units, or like your general can be an elephant unit. And then we were like, how did they get elephants
Yeah.
across the water? Because when you put your cavalry on a ship, it makes sense that they put all the
Yeah.
horses underneath the deck. So like if you land your cavalry in a fight, they don't have time to get the horses out, and so you just have your cavalry on foot. But elephants wouldn't fit under decks, so how did they manage to ship? So then I started Googling, trying to find out how on earth they transported elephants. I couldn't find any concrete information as to specifically how they put them on the ship, but they did actually ship the elephants somehow
Yeah, I mean
via boat.
a thing with Hannibal, he was like a Carthaginian guy generally. He's like one of the most famous
Yeah.
generals of all time, whatever. He was famous for like taking elephants over like the Alps basically when he wanted to go and sack Rome, which was like insane because he was taking elephants up these ridiculously high mountains and then
Yeah.
yeah.
Elephants love mountains, we all know that.
So yeah, but yeah, you should look up Hannibal and stuff because he was an interesting dude. But I think I already mentioned like Hardcore History. That podcast is
Yeah.
awesome if you're interested in.
That's a good. I've actually. I often find I finish the Bombcast really early in the week and
Yeah,
then wish I had another podcast. So
I
maybe
think
I'll
like
just start downloading that.
I guess well the problem with Hardcore History is that it's like once every couple of months an episode gets released, but they tend to be fairly long. And yeah, it's super interesting. It's not really dry as well. It's not just like here's this historical thing, and then this thing happened. It's not just like a listing of the events. Like the dude Dan Carlin who does them like puts his own spin on things, and like he's really like
Yeah.
well he knows how to make an interesting like radio sort of podcasty show thing out of like really interesting historical events instead of just reciting them like verbatim.
Neat.
I think yeah, well, Total War 2 is going to be one of the first things I buy once I get this PC set up because
We should do a
definitely
campaign.
or a Crusader Kings 2 campaign.
Quick game plan. Can you do it as
You can
co-op?
definitely do a multiplayer. I don't know how crazy it is.
Shit, why haven't we done this already? What is wrong with us?
that game must be insane multiplayer, but because it's not even turn based.
Oh shit, you're right.
Is it turn? Wow. No, it isn't. Is it? It's all real time.
It's not turn based at all.
God, that would be that would be insane.
Oh my god. That's madness.
Yeah, like that game. Yeah, I'd have to pause that game quite a lot because it's just crazy shit going down. Like it was the same thing you were saying about like not being able to keep track of the map. Like once you start expanding and like you end up with like a kingdom or like close enough to an empire, it just gets insane. Like because it's just like every like couple of seconds, it's like these people have just revolted and then these people have declared war on you. It's just like trying to keep track of like multiple fronts and it gets a bit crazy. But
just a tad.
I guess that game would be super interesting multiplayer. when you get that sorted once February's over and work's a bit less crazy, when you arrange that.
Definitely. That leaves I'm halfway through my list of stuff. So I also played briefly, I'll touch on a bit of Arma 3. I went back and I actually started the single player on that because I forgot it existed until I got a notification that was like, the second chapter of the Arma 3 DLC, the Arma 3 single player has been added. And I was like, oh yeah, I forgot they're doing it. It's like
episodic
DLC. So I went back and started the first episode and it seemed interesting. I remember I talked about briefly touching the Arma 2 campaign, but it was a bit jank, I suppose, is the way to put it. But the concepts at least posed in it were interesting. Like there was a lot of looking into the whole, you know, military gravesite kind of thing. There's intrigue there, but I never went back and played it because the mechanics weren't all that hot. Arma 3 has got a lot more polish to it, I suppose is the way of putting it. The voice acting didn't seem
terrible. Oh, so it's actually a story. It's not like...
Yeah, it's... I don't know. I'll talk about the first mission because that's all I played, but it kind of starts off you're on Stratus, which is the main island in that game, and you're sort of going about your daily business as a soldiery dude. You get in a helicopter and ride off with your squad over the, you know, over the hills. And then they're just chatting about sort of their daily lives kind of thing, like kind of like you're just plopped into the, you know, average day of one of these soldiers on this island, and they're sort of bitching about how they've been, you know, fighting this pointless war on that island for ages and moaning about stuff. And then they keep on moaning about these guys called Green Shirts, which is, I guess, is their sort of colloquial nickname for a certain sort of, I don't know if it's mercenary or like NATO or something, you know, some other force who have been sent in to also help with this operation. And they're constantly bitching about them, how they're all up themselves and like they don't really like. And so you land your helicopter and then you get asked to drive a big like truck, effectively. You just like drive this truck to this other settlement. Because they're talking about how all the roads are closed. And when you're flying over with a helicopter, you see a Jeep driving about. And you're like, aren't the roads closed? Like, why? Maybe there's something weird's going on. So that's the first thing you get, that something weird is happening. And then you get in this truck and they're like, drive this truck to this other city. And so you're driving it along and you come to a sort of a military checkpoint where they have to check your truck. And then there's more bitching about the green shirt guys, you know, checking for the truck. And they're like, oh, I bet they don't even know what they're looking for. And then they let you through the checkpoint. You carry on going. And then all of a sudden, you can see the city that you're heading towards over in the distance. And then all of a sudden, it just fucking explodes. Like, just explosions start popping off, gunfire. Like, all sorts of crazy radio chatter comes in. Like, the you know, people been saying, we're under attack, not really sure what's going on. And then you realize it's the green shirts are actually the guys who have started, you know, effectively killing everyone, even though they're supposed to be your allies, and you don't know why that's happened. And then you sort of have to run off into the forest to try and get away from them, you know, so sort of trying to escape from the craziness that's going on. That's kind of the concept for the first mission. So I'm not really sure where it's going, but there's a good presentation. Like they had like a proper like intro title sequence and stuff, and the game looks really good graphically. Like it still brings my PC to its knees. I can't run that game very well at all, frame rate wise, unfortunately. But Yeah, that got me excited about Arma 3 again, and then I ended up trying to join in with one of the Arma game nights that the Giant Bomb PC Gaming Hub do. I had one yesterday, but I got home late, so I only caught the last 15 minutes. But that, yeah, the stuff that was in Arma 2, the super realism mod, the Acre,
yeah,
A-C-R-E, I believe it's called, mod, that's been ported over to Arma 3 now, and there's a bunch of sort of... There's, I think the game mode they were playing, which I didn't understand very well because I kind of joined right at the end, but it was effectively one person is like the games master and drops in on the fly, you know, like enemy units, you know, all kinds of stuff. They're basically like a GM would be in like a...
Dungeons and Dragons, yeah.
A role-playing game. Yeah, exactly, Dungeons and Dragons. So it's basically one person does that and then everyone else is sort of teaming up to try and defeat the games master. The idea is to try and make it balanced and achievable, yeah, but fun. So it's cool, emergent kind of stuff. But yeah, I'll try and join them in 2. They do those every other week at the moment, so I'll probably join them
just
in 2.
Just going back to the like the campaign stuff, is that like, do they maintain like the open worldiness of it, or is it? Huh.
Yeah. So I mean, obviously the objectives were linear, but it's just a big ass open island.
You could have
like
just went wherever,
pretty much anywhere I want. Admittedly, in that particular mission, I was I had a squad leader who was giving me orders,
and
I was
meant
to follow him to safety. Like he was, so basically, when it's all linear, like when you're driving the truck, it's like follow these roads, drive to the point, and then when it goes crazy, you start running into the forest, and it's just a big open, like just a big hill. You just sort of kind of run in a direction, and then a helicopter flies over, and you try and get to the helicopter, but then it gets blown up by a jet. And then at that point, you kind of readjust your route and just run into the forest that's nearby to try and get away. But it's just a big ass open island, and they just kind of sprinkle objectives around it. I think the sort of co-op missions that people have made for multiplayer, a lot of those are not story driven, but they're sort of you know, immersive story from just open objectives. And those are completely open. Like you can go in from any angle you want on those missions and do whatever you like. They just give you the whole island to play around with and send you around, jumping around to objectives across it, which is cool.
That sounds awesome, actually. Arma's another one that's like sort of not the reason I'm building a PC, but one of the things I definitely want to play, or because it just seems insane.
if you get it, I recommend joining in with Giant Bomb PC Gaming. Because co-op is the way to play that game. That's the most exciting thing about it, is in the multiplayer stuff. And they play all of the, you know, hardcore simulation mod stuff, but they don't take it seriously. Like, it's not like you're joining up with some super military nuthead to
shout at you because you're not walking at the right speed.
In formation. Yeah, exactly. I really need to work out how you do the crouching thing in
there. There's like a million different
stances. I don't know what the modifier buttons are. I only know how to crouch, lie down, and stand up. I've never managed
the sitting down position. Like,
I know how to sit down. I know that.
That stuff's amazing.
Yeah, but there's all kinds of different like variants of the sitting down. In like you, so you can sit down, but lean forwards to shoot. So you can, like, rest your arms on your knees to steady your gun and crazy shit like that. It's weird. So that's general stuff that I've been playing, but now let's binge about Titanfall.
Here we go.
So, yeah, you didn't play the beta, I presume. I played the beta on PC, and I was kind of... I've been sort of cautiously interested in Titanfall for a while. So at Eurogamer, I obviously played there and really enjoyed it. But I had some reservations from watching other people play, mainly about how the AI is integrated. It's at the time I was like, it looks clever because it looks like a way. So I was watching people that clearly were bad at shooters, but were getting loads of kills and doing awesome shit just because of the way that game's structured, which is a clever design, but I'm not sure how fun it will be for, you know, people who are really into shooters or stuff like that. So I had my reservations about that, and I didn't play a whole bunch of the beta. Admittedly, I played through like the tutorial that they had. I played a bunch of rounds of the Last Titan Standing game mode, which is basically you get one life, and the team whose titans all explode lose. It's a basically how that game mode works. And then I played a few other bits and pieces of like the capture the flag and the just straight up deathmatch that they had. So the first thing that's worth mentioning is I'm 99% sure the best way to play that game is never get in your stupid giant robot. Because it makes you a giant target. Two, you can't even kill that many things faster. Like, if you start fighting a Titan, it's as fast, if not faster, to just shoot it with a rocket launcher whilst on foot if you want to blow it up, rather than shoot it with another mech. And then killing dudes on the ground, you can do marginally quicker than if you were just running around on the ground anyway. I find I can score way higher if I just... So you can set your Titan to just follow you about and be a giant retard magnet. So I just set my Titan to follow me, and then people just get distracted by the giant robot that's standing behind me whilst I blap, blap, blap them in the face. Which seems kind of broken, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I just don't think the mechs are actually particularly useful. One positive is the movement is absolutely fantastic, as I expected. It's so fantastic, I'm almost concerned it's broken. Like, so if I ran over to a building, say it was like a four-story high building, you'd not be able to jump up it. Like, if I ran up it and jumped, I'd be able to double jump, and then I'd just fall back down. However, if I ran at an angle, double jumped, then wall ran, then double jumped again, then wall ran again, I could get up to the top. So you can just chain double, like, if you, when you finish a wall run, you jump off the wall, double jump back to the wall, and can continue wall running. And like, I got good enough at that where I could pretty much scale any building, like, regardless of how many floors it was. As long as there was, you know, a couple of walls nearby, I could get on the roof of anything pretty much instantly. It felt amazing. Like, having that much freedom was really sweet. But I don't know, that seems like I'm almost abusing it. I felt like I wasn't meant to be able to climb stuff like that. But I guess if you got that good with it, I guess maybe that's a reward of the gameplay there, which is cool. I really like that aspect of it. I think that's the best part of Titanfall, is the mobility with the jetpacks, and just you can fucking book it and get anywhere you want. You see somewhere, I want to be up there, yeah, no problem. Just get up there. My other criticism was the SMG is broken. I mean, that was just... obviously, the beta has limited guns in it. But I felt like I was coming up against people with my assault rifle, and I was shooting people with my assault rifle and not missing at all. But I would die first just because I had the submachine gun. So mine, that's not really relevant. And I guess the biggest problem I had with it was... So... I struggled to find human beings in the game. So I know a lot of people have said, you know, what they will about the fact that it's 6v6. And because the maps are quite large, you only ever see people when they're in a giant-ass robot. I saw hundreds upon hundreds of bots, and the bots are so retarded, it's, like, offensive. Like, it actually hurt watching the bots. I would run up to a bot, and they'd just be like crouching there, shooting me, not ever hitting me. And I could see like six bots maybe, and wouldn't have to shoot any of them. I could just run up and melee all of them, and wouldn't die. They pose literally zero threat. It makes sense because then, you know, bad people can get kills. But as someone who wants at least somewhat a challenge, and killing bots isn't fun because you get significantly less score. They barely even surface the amount of bots you killed on the leaderboard. And it's just a waste of my time just seeing all these bots running around when I want to find someone actually competent in the game and try and shoot them. And like, it just makes finding real people really hard. Like, I'll see people running around in robots, and most of the time I can't be asked to engage with that because it just takes so long to kill a mech. But you just never really see any of the other pilots on foot. And that's why I ended up spending most of my time playing the Last Titan Standing game mode, because I found I could abuse it by just getting out of my robot as soon as the game started, switching to my rocket launcher, and then just going around blasting other Titans with a rocket launcher whilst hiding on a roof of a building. Because when you're in the Titan, you just can't really notice players that well. Especially when me, hiding on the top of a roof behind a little... like, just that my head was poking over the edge of a ledge, firing rockets over and then ducking back behind cover. Like, I was rarely ever in any danger. I basically never died in the Last Titan Standing game mode because it was impossible to see me. I could just jump out, like, rocket, jump back, just constantly hiding. So I want to like that game, but I'm struggling to be as enthused about it as I was before. I think it's my feelings coming out of the
Yeah, theater. I mean, it seems interesting, but, like, 6 on 6 is just... just isn't enough. Like, for me, personally, like...
The AI just
I understand, obviously, them not wanting to have, like, a million mechs all at the same time, but there must have been a way to do that, like, involve more, like, real players, but not give everyone mechs. I don't know, like, what... Like, maybe you can only have, like, 3 mechs at the same time, like, for each team or something. Like, you'd put in some sort of restriction in there.
Yeah, like in Call of Duty, where you try and call in an airstrike, and it's like, there's already one of these happening. You can't wait a bit.
which I guess, I don't know, that would probably lead to people complaining, like, oh, I did way better than this guy, but... Or I'm doing way better than this guy, but I can't have a mech because he's still alive or something, or... I don't know. I don't...
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like a really interesting concept for a game, but like having like dumb AI, like cannon fodder sort of guys just doesn't.
They are.
Yeah, they
so
are, like
stupid.
From the bits of the videos that Giant Bomb did, like they just didn't seem very very capable.
Like you'll just walk into rooms and you'll just see two AIs just like looking at each other, just not really doing anything. If you're lucky, they'll be having a retarded fist fight, which will go on for about 5 minutes if you just stand there and watch it, and neither of them will die ever.
Well, I mean, I guess there's still time, but...
Yeah, it's not...
Yeah.
Not over, but... I don't know. I was thinking of picking that up when it came out. But at the current moment of time, I'm not sure I will.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was my bitching about Titanfall. I will wait and see on that. Probably end up picking it up in the end, but I'm sure a lot of people will love the shit out of the game. It ticks a lot of the boxes of what the Call of Duty people like, and it seems different enough that it will keep a lot of people interested. It's not a bad game. No. It's not a bad game at all. It's just not what I'm looking for, unfortunately. And I guess the last thing I wanted to talk about was Twitch Plays Pokemon.
No, I haven't seen any of it. I haven't really had time to watch weird Twitch experiments, but
it's like it's the most amazing thing ever. It's just me.
Is it
everyone
like
at my
uni
talking
bit,
about
basically.
It?
Yeah.
It's bigger. Just imagine if there's just like a... It's like Big Brother. It's like reality TV I can get behind, but it's constantly on. 24/7. There's this constant drama. Everything about it is drama. It's amazing. And everyone I know is talking about it. There's loads of dumb memes and amazing pictures that have come out of it. Crazy artwork. It's basically spawned a religion. And... Despite how incredibly boring it is and the fact that nothing happens, I can't stop watching it. And it's because despite the fact that it's so slow and nothing happens, they're still achieving things. And then things also go wrong. But they're achieving things as well. And that's the cool thing about Twitch Plays Pokemon. Man, I love Twitch Plays Pokemon.
It's a fascinating concept.
It's one of those things where you're just like, fuck, I wish I had made that.
it's
such a simple idea.
It's so crazy.
I would talk more about it, but if you haven't watched it, I can't.
Like, I mean, I think I've picked up a lot from the Bombcast and stuff, but...
Did you hear about, like, releasing Pokemon?
Yeah,
they released Starter stuff. And... Oh, man. Those drama just went on a minute ago. They caught a Zapdos with a Master Ball, and then they went to try and get the Zapdos out of the computer. In the process, released two of the most well-known Pokemon that they have, Dux, which is a Farfetch that they traded for, which knew Cut, and like it was basically the only Pokemon they had that cut things. And then also an oddish that evolved into a gloom called X Cabbage, because the nicknames they have are so stupid, and then everyone's them like nicknames. And did you hear about
No.
ATV? When they were in the Safari Zone, they caught a Venonat and then nicknamed it AATTVVV, and so everyone's referring to it as the all-terrain Venonat. And there are loads of images of ATV with Venonat photoshopped onto it. And there's one, because they caught like 15 or something Pokemon in the Safari Zone, there's this one image of an ATV Venonat with all of the other Pokemon that they caught in the Safari Zone riding it, and it's just unbelievably good. There's so much really good, stupid art that's come out of it. And they've got a Lapras called Air, and they fought a Grimer, and the Grimers, so loads of the art in Pokemon Blue and Red is rubbish. I totally forgot how bad it is. But the Grimer basically just has its hands up, just like waving its arms in the air for some reason. And someone just got a picture of the battle between the Lapras and the Grimer, and then just put at the top, it just said, put your hands up in the. And then because the Lapras is called Air, it just said, put your hands up in the air. And the Grimer was just like, so stupid. Oh, I love Twitch. Twitch.
Oh, yeah. It's a fantastic idea.
I don't know what I'm gonna do when it ends. That's the
well,
problem.
You know, these things
what
come
I'm
and go.
With my life.
There'll be something else soon. I think the interesting thing it's doing though is like, I don't know. It's sort of showing how like insane it would be if like, you know, like the comment sections of videos on Giant Bomb can get pretty insane, like especially on like Breaking Bad and stuff and Load Our Last Souls, with like people giving advice and like, oh, you're playing the game wrong, like all that crazy shit. Like if they actually like try to follow people's advice, it would just be like Twitch plays Pokemon. Like if you try to follow the chat, because like there's like 10% of people are just there to just fuck you up, basically. Like give well all yeah probably more than 10%, but like I suppose on Giant Bomb it's slightly lower than like the internet average, but yeah, it's still a fair amount of people just basically trolling. Like, oh, do this, or roll off that edge, because then you'll land on an invisible platform and get the best weapon in the game. Like, stuff like that. And then, like, the other people, it's like split between doing like however many options there are to do. And it's like, it's, and like, getting really angry when like Brad or whoever's playing doesn't do exactly what they do, exactly what they say, and exactly how they played it. It's like if they actually try to follow everyone's advice, they would try and do like all these things at the same time, and it would just it's not gonna happen. Just like oh man, yeah. And I think Twitch Plays Pokemon is sort of showing that like perfectly. It's like I heard about the cliff story, like trying to get up those cliffs and like walking back down, like falling all the way back down, and
yeah, and then restarting again. They spent 2 days trying to get through the game corner in Celadon City. 2 days, and then the creator had to introduce democracy mode so they would actually ever be able to beat it. They spent 3 hours retarding against the Safari Zone and never would have beaten it. I would put money on the fact that it is physically impossible to beat the Safari Zone normally without democracy mode, before they finally put democracy on and managed to get there. Crazy.
But yeah, it's still awesome. It's just it does expose like how crazy like stuff like the invention of like chat on live streams, like how much that just must fuck with the person he was actually doing the streaming, like trying to keep a track of that stuff and like actually try and get anything useful out of there. It was just, yeah, it's not gonna happen. Even happening on a game that like is fairly sort of simple, like Pokemon. Like if you extrapolate that out to something a lot more complicated, like Dark Souls or Demon Souls or something else, like, you know, like
a lot of the problem though comes from the Twitch streamer. Even with the help of some other stuff like democracy mode, people were still fucking it up because the Twitch delay, a lot of people didn't get their head around the fact that they need to input commands 20 seconds into the future, predict what has happened in that time. You know.
Oh, God. Just
do that.
Insane. It's
crazy.
It's a really, really fantastic idea, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that brings us on to news. Yes.
Not really that much going on, I suppose. I mean, there's like big news, but not a lot of it, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, kicking it off, we have the dissolvement? I don't know, is that a word? Basically, Irrational Games.
They have dissolved.
Was it Ken Levine, the head of Irrational Games? Is that right? Yeah, so Ken Levine came out and said he's moving on to smaller projects, effectively. He's going to be taking 15 of his favorite people from Irrational, making a smaller team under 2K, are they part of? Making a smaller team under 2K, and then working on some downloadable story. Driven titles, I believe is the way he phrased it.
He said he wanted to make stuff that's like narratively strong but also highly replayable. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But like fairly interesting and pretty specific wording. Like it's not like that's not usually the sort of thing you hear. It's like, oh, we're working on like smaller games or something. Like for him to say like highly replayable is it's a bit weird, but it's good to know that he's, you know, he's actually got a vision for what he wants to do with that small team. But
He clearly already has ideas in motion.
I guess working on there. The other sort of story that comes out of this is sort of the reaction to the news story hitting is a bit weird. Like, well, it's like the initial wave was like people going like, oh well, Bioshock Infinite was a piece of shit, so they deserve to like close down or whatever. It's like, well, it wasn't really a piece of shit, like whichever way you look at it, and like
that
still doesn't
wasn't.
Like justify like a studio closing down, like Irrational, who like, I mean, in their various incarnations have made like some awesome games, even if you discount Bioshock, which I personally wouldn't, but I know some people had some pretty strong feelings against it, but and then there's like people like, oh well, like what, like fuck you, Ken Levine, like you're basically like sacking these like or laying all these people off because you want to build your own smaller games, like that sort of shitty. But like I think that the circumstances surrounding like the actual like what actually happened and like why Irrational are no longer a studio is maybe a bit more complicated than like than what Ken said in his statement, because there must be something going on in the background there, because I really can't see Ken Levine just being like, oh well, like, you know what, like fuck these guys, I'm gonna start doing something smaller. Like if that was the case, if that was like what you initially wanted, I still would like to believe that you'd try his hardest to keep those people employed and like.
Yeah, I mean, just because he's going off doesn't mean Irrational has to cease existing. Like there must have been something else. I don't see why Irrational wouldn't.
Yeah, and like even if Irrational didn't carry on, like you think that like those people would just be rolled into like 2K as a whole, like at different places, like.
Yeah, maybe some of them.
I think it's maybe there's maybe something else going on there. Because Ken Levine, I don't know, he never struck me as the guy who wanted to do smaller stuff. I guess like the games he has done tend to be fairly big in scope. And like he's doing the script for the remake of Logan's Run. He's a guy who I think is a big fan of cinema, and that like bears out in a lot of the work he's done. Like I don't know, it's a bit weird, but and like Irrational obviously a really talented studio, so it sucks to sort of see those guys like that name just sort of not existing anymore. And I see like there was a bunch of stuff about how like they were trying their hardest to get those guys like employed in like other studios and stuff, which is cool.
Yeah.
I'm still interested to see what he does, especially like with smaller scope sort of stuff, because I think that was almost like, as much as he loves that sort of the grand sort of scope stuff, I think that is where some of the problems with like his games come from. Like I thought Bioshock was like a perfectly competent game, or was more than perfectly competent. I quite liked it, but it was some of the story stuff I don't think worked. So, like on the the sort of political stuff and like the science fictiony, like the time traveling, dimension swapping stuff, like some of that just, it felt a bit sort of, by the end it was a bit sort of clumsy, the story. So it'll be nice to see him try and do something a bit smaller on scope, maybe. Because he's a good writer. I just think maybe he gets a bit carried away sometimes. But yeah, that was that.
That's the news about Irrational. Additionally, we have Rust has already made more than Gary's mod, which apparently reportedly made $30 million in its existence, which is, yeah, apparently people like DayZ type games.
That is the new thing, apparently.
I'm quite impressed at how much Rust has blown up. I remember finding out about it before it was on Steam, and they were basically selling 500 copies a day. They basically had a limited pool. You could, you know, they'd sell 500 alpha keys, and then if you missed those 500 in that day, you couldn't get a hold of it. And I nearly bought it. And at the time, I remember looking it up on Twitch, and like the highest viewed channel on it had less than 50 viewers. I was like, I could get this game, maybe start streaming it. And now Rust is like one of the top five most streamed games on Twitch pretty much every day. It's the transition to Steam that it made has blown it up in ways that I don't think even Facepunch could have predicted.
That genre is a really interesting thing. Yeah, it's weird. But it's really, really interesting. Like,
I don't understand how the hype hasn't died down. Like, I played DayZ for, I had one awesome experience in DayZ, and then I was like, okay, I've had my DayZ moment. Let's move on.
I think like a couple of weeks ago or something, for some reason I was sort of interested to see like where DayZ was, like what was going on. Like, so I went searching on YouTube for like a video of the current standalone version, whatever version it is at now. It's like still beta or alpha or something. I don't know. It's not finished basically. The amount of videos that were like posted like within a week of me searching and like had like well into like, you know, six digit like view figures was insane. I thought that game had like sort of tailed off after they started the standalone thing. Ironically, I thought it like everyone had just been like, I don't really want to play this anymore, but. I was sorely mistaken, obviously, because Rust and DayZ are like currently the top selling games on Steam by probably some significant margin.
Destroy that.
Like the fact that like, DayZ is up there, it's more weird because like that game just does not seem anywhere near like the point, even that like the mod was at. Like it's more like it's a more like fixed sort of competent game, but like there's nothing there, like the content isn't there.
Did you see Giant Bomb Slayer on that live stream? Were they playing standalone?
Yeah.
It looked like they were just playing Arma 2 DayZ. Like they were playing the same map.
Arma 2 DayZ was
very similar.
Rougher than that.
It looked very similar from what I remember of my experience with DayZ. And when they shot that woman,
Arma 2.
She was bleeding out of her ass.
Yeah, that video was.
The people were dancing with the axe.
Yeah, that was.
I was.
Maybe I understand why DayZ is popular. That's the sort of daily occurrences that happen.
Stunned. I mean, my one DayZ moment, I don't know, I must have mentioned it on the podcast, but it's been a long time, was when me and my cousin were playing. Some guy came up to us with, like, an assault rifle, and then just basically held us up and was like, get on the ground, like, was ordering us around, like, we were his captives, and then was, like, fucking with us, and he was like, put your stuff on the ground, roll around, like, making us do really dumb shit. And then he was just like, I'm just fucking with you. And gave us free shit. And then we went off with him and went exploring. That was the most amazing experience in almost like any video game that I've had. It was unbelievable.
That sort of emergent, just weird stuff. Basically, like, letting the people within the game sort of essentially decide the rules is really, really interesting.
I think it's sort of has an influence on like Twitch plays Pokemon. Like, it is almost, you could almost draw a comparison between, it's not the game that's telling any sort of,
and it's not really, it's not really the mechanics of the game itself that are that interesting. It's like the way that the people playing it sort of use those mechanics.
And have you seen like the YouTube videos, like there's a bunch of them. So for example, no. It's called Destiny versus.
Oh, is that the one where he goes to like the airport and there's the.
There's a guy outside going like no. And they can just keep hearing that, and then he goes outside and there's some dude chasing them going no. Just constantly just chasing them for like 15 minutes.
It's the one,
and fucking with them.
It's
and then
the one where it's like it's actually like genuinely sort of unnerving, where I think a guy, he goes to like the airport area and it's pretty dark, and he goes to like he gets in this building and there's like this dude with like a hammer or something, and he's got like a crazy mask on, and he's like, he's whistling or playing some creepy music or something down his mic, and just starts like walking towards the guy, just like, he doesn't, never like breaks into a run, just starts walking, and the guy's like laughing, like, just, you know, stay back, whatever. And then like he just walks, and then like the guy like turns around and turns back, and then he's just gone, because I think he like disconnects or something, and like, or he like intentionally switches off his game. But yeah, stuff like that is it's awesome. But
One of my other favorite videos was the riding dirty one.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen that.
There's a guy on a bicycle playing Riding Dirty over his microphone, and then the game disconnects and he just flies off into space. It's one of the most amazing pieces of YouTube I've ever seen. More recently, one of my friends told me, apparently there's this guy, I don't know what his nickname is, but he basically goes around wearing no clothes, and then just stands next to snipers and like jumps up and down, like standing behind snipers, so that like people are walking around and then they'll see a naked guy jumping up and down, and they go over and like they realize that there was a sniper there trying to kill them. And like they're like, oh, thanks. There's this guy that's going around Daisy even naked, jumping on snipers to help other people out. Yeah. So amazing.
Yeah, Daisy is a bizarre thing. And so is Ross, to be fair.
I don't know.
Yeah, like from what I've seen, it just seems a bit more like construct, like a bit more Minecrafty than Daisy.
Yeah, it's got Minecrafty bits to it.
But yeah, I'm excited to see what those games turn into when they're finished, I guess, and whether like that, and whether that popularity like maintains. But I mean, I would have thought by now like that, like Daisy would have completely fell off everyone's radar. But it's probably more popular than it's ever been. So I was obviously sorely mistaken. But yeah, I like. Jeff on the Bombcast a couple of weeks ago was saying like that's like now like what the like kids who are in school like play, like the sort of teenagers now play, and like, yeah, I can totally see that being like a really I wish I was a teenager now playing that stuff with like my group of friends, because we would have absolutely laughed that up. Like now, like, I mean, I still want to play it, but it's like, you know, there's a lot less people now who are like, oh yeah, I totally play some Daisy or something weird like that. It's insane and sort of awesome, that stuff exists.
Indeed. Moving on to the next story, I guess. Star Citizen has reached a whopping $39 million in fundraising.
Oh man.
I hope that isn't a game.
Yeah.
I hope they're just going to bankroll that and fuck off to Barbados forever.
I don't even know what Star Citizen is. Like, I've vaguely, the only way I've heard about it is people like mentioning it on podcasts and stuff. Like, I've never seen any footage of it or pictures of it or anything.
There's nothing to it. It's just a concept. They've made like a hangar that you can walk around in and look at the spaceship you spent $200 on. But that's it. There isn't a game to Star Citizen. It's just $39 million burning a hole in the ground. But maybe it'll become a thing one day, right?
Maybe. Possibly.
I don't know. I don't know.
Kickstarter's weird. Video games are weird now.
Yeah.
Like, they were pretty weird before. But
Most of that money they didn't even raise through Kickstarter. They just raised it up through their website. Just taking money directly. Now, like, people are just handing them money for nothing at this point.
It's impressive. Yeah, it really is. But it's also sort of...
I wish I could get people to give me
sort of worrying, like, that people are so willing to give over money for... Basically, words. Like, I could probably come up with a pretty good pitch for a game. Like, doesn't mean I'm ever actually going to make it.
Exactly.
Man.
But yeah, let's move on. Next article we have here says PS4 will remain hard to find until April, according to Sony. Which is funny because I went into my local PC World recently and they had like 10 of them on a shelf. They're not that hard to find.
Is that? That might be an American, that's what I was going to say.
But I was on GameSpot UK, so I don't know why they had that article. But yeah, in the UK, it seems okay to get a PS4 at the moment. What, even considering the Japanese launch is coming up soon, doesn't seem to be a problem.
Yeah, I will buy a PS4 at some point, but
I do really want to wait till the revision, and even then. Have to be something good to make it worthwhile. My friends have to maybe have them. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's purely just going to be a games thing. Let's see. Amazon say in stock March 25th for PS4. But that's just a PS4 on its own. Like, I think they've got some bundles in stock. A bundle, and they've got the PS4 and Killzone Shadowfall in stock, but it's like way inflated. Like £470.
Jesus.
That's not the price you should pay for PS4, probably.
Yeah, please don't. I saw a PS4 in person for the first time recently.
No.
Didn't use it. Just
looked at it.
Yeah, there was this one at the house I was at. And I was like, oh, look, a PS4. All right, last news story for the week. We have, apparently, rumor is there is going to be a new Tony Hawk Pro Skater. And all the news articles I've seen have said Pro Skater in particular, so I don't know whether that means it's going to be a actual Pro Skater, like it will have Pro Skater in the title, or they're just using that as a term for the franchise rather than just saying a new Tony Hawk game. Because I guess those two things.
There was all that dumb like Tony Hawk. What was the dumb games with the board called? There's Tony Hawk Shred and Tony Hawk Ride.
Ride.
Oh, they looked so.
Yeah.
Bad.
I didn't mind.
Pretty much dropped off the radar after American Wasteland. Like, I don't think I played one since then.
Yeah, there was like Thug was shit. American Wasteland was bad, but then they had a bit of an up with Project 8. It was okay. And then they went back downhill.
Didn't mind American Wasteland. But yeah. Or Thug, actually. I don't think I ever played Thug 2, but yeah. I mean, those games, they are really dumb, and I'd probably hate them if I played them now, but at the time I was like, oh, it's pretty cool, you can get off your board, even though it's like janky as fuck and like sort of terrible. and there was that dumb bit at the end where you drive around in a car. It's like the final mission was you driving around in this dumb like sports car thing, racing your rival, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. I think that was the end of
Thread. You drive a car.
It was, yeah.
Tony, what have you done?
It was pretty terrible. But yeah, I don't know, like, that. I think the last sort of Tony Hawk thing was that the HD version of, like, the old sort of pro skate.
Yeah, and that was University Pan,
which,
as well.
Yeah, it didn't seem...
It's because they didn't... It was, like, five maps or something. It was,
yeah,
like, what the fuck
didn't,
are you
didn't
doing?
It didn't seem great. And that was one of the worst trial versions of a game, or demos of a game ever, because it didn't even, like... They gave you, like, I think they gave you, like, a couple of maps you could ride around on, but they didn't give you, like, the full 2 minutes. Like, that's the standard thing in pro skate, is, like, two minutes to do a bunch of objectives on a level. And, like, I think they gave you, like, a minute and then, like, didn't even, like, give you any screen that was like, oh, here's what you did. It's just, like, it just sort of ended and was like, here, like, buy the game now, please. It's like,
Well, that's because the game had so little content. Yeah. Like, it didn't really have anything
like,
to put
like,
in a
It seemed like demo. Really, like, poorly curated. It was like, oh, let's get a bunch of stuff from, like, the games that no one likes. Like, why not? You could pretty much, like, take every, like, map from, like, 2 and 3 and 4. Or, well, not maybe not every map, but, like, just from those three games, and people would be fine. Like, there are some classics that you need in there, I think, to make a truly... great like Tony Hawk sort of remake. Like I think the airport was in there from T, or like the hangar, but God, I'm trying to, it's been so long since I've played Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2. It's God. I can't remember any of that. There's the one in France which was pretty good.
Yeah, that's in
Venice. Is Venice Beach? Pro Skater 2. God, it's been far too long since I played those games.
I remember as a kid being stuck on the French level of Pro Skater 2 for a very long time.
Possibly indefinitely, yes. This school, that was a pretty good one. Where like, it had the leap of faith jump right at the start. That was pretty cool. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know whether I want a new pro skater. Really, like, I don't know what you do to that game to make it fresh and also, like, not just fall into the same sort of pitfalls as the newer non pro skater Tony Hawk games. Like, I think people went off pro skater or those sorts of games for a reason. Like, it just got a bit stale. Like, I'm just gonna manual for like a million hours. Just mashing on buttons basically and getting ridiculous combos. Like, those games lost a lot of their difficulty when they went a bit crazy with like the revert. When you know when you came down off of the it was a revert.
Yeah, because you could change.
Yeah, pretty much. And I think like they have to sort of tone it down a bit in terms of like
get rid of some of that stuff
because it did get pretty ridiculous and like lost some of the challenge of that game, of those games. Pro Skater was, I don't know, but I think they need to like focus more on the sort of the weird like sort of humor aspects of those games, because those games could be pretty funny in a weird way.
Something to be said for it. I mean, I appreciated the open worldiness of like Project 8, but there's something to be said with the tightly designed levels and the strict objectives that you had to do in each one, and a variety of environments that really worked for those older games better than the newer ones.
And like, I don't want them to go down the skate route, because like, skate's already been done, and like,
Skate already did the open world as well as you could, and that control scheme, they just need to stick to what's good about Pro Skater.
Yeah, we'll see. Another beloved franchise coming back, I guess. It seems to be a pretty strong trend these days. Just hope it's not like Dungeon Keeper bullshit, like coming back and completely fucking up the name. But then again, Tony Hawk's, in terms of video games, is... that name probably doesn't hold as much weight as it did Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No, that's pretty much all I had, unless you had anything else you wanted to contribute.
I think so. I don't think there was any big news over the last 2 weeks. It's just sort of crazy, except for Irrational. Like,
yeah. Switch-based Pokemon is pretty good.
That's there. Yeah, I suppose that's news. I guess I can't remember whether we mentioned like the end game of Flappy Bird, like actually like being removed.
We mentioned it was going to / had been removed. I deleted it from my phone anyway, pretty shortly after I downloaded it and then deleted it. I have, however, kept Flappy Doggy, which is
I played it like twice. Because a friend had it on the phone and I was like, oh, I may as well see what all the fuss is about, and it seems sort of terrible, so have you seen like the whole like Happy Bird stuff and like just the a million zillion clones that are coming out at Flappy Bird?
They've been banned from the store now. Anything with Flappy in the title gets banned immediately.
But what if it's a perfectly legitimate game?
Yeah, well, too late. Don't put Flappy in the title.
You have been warned.
Yes, you have. Right then, unless you have anything else you want to add, I think that does us for this week's podcast. As usual, you can email us themightyelectronicbox@gmail.com, or you can send us a tweet at TMEBpodcast. Thanks for listening. Hopefully we'll be back next week. I don't know why we've been slow with updates recently, but maybe we'll even have a Joe. We should get a new Joe.
But old Joe's fine. He's just... Well, really? Maybe, yeah, I don't know.
Is he really?
Quiet. All right, well, thanks for listening, and say goodbye, John. Goodbye, John.